item number 7. This is our Wolf Management Summer 2013 Update Briefing. Donnie, come on up. And Stephanie, welcome. Always interesting to hear about wolves.
Thank you,
welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the Commission, I'm Donnie Martorello. I'm the Carnivore Section Manager. And with me to my right here is Stephanie Simic. I'd like to introduce you to her. She's our new Conflict Section Manager in Game Division as a report to Dave Ware. And she came on in January. We're glad to have her. She brings a wealth of experience on conflict issues. She's come to us from Florida, where she worked with some conflict issues with black bears. And I'll brag a little bit about her right now. She's actually finishing up her dissertation. It'll be Dr. Simic here soon. So,
get it done.
Thank you.
A lot of people don't.
She will.
Good.
I'd like to, Stephanie and I are going to tag team on a summer update, and just a reminder that we'll be coming back to you after the end of the year with a final update on wolf activities for 2013. That'll be more of a comprehensive update. This is just a quick summer update. So everything we're going to talk to you about today is from January 1st through last week. And the items we're going to be going over are capture and monitoring that we've done this year, a review of livestock depredation reports, use of preventative non-lethal tools. Stephanie will also talk about the recent rollout of our conflict staff, our new conflict staff, our outreach efforts related to wolves, an update on budget, some planning and policy development with our wolf advisory group, and then finally, the federal delisting that's out in front of us here. So I'll start off with an update on captures and collaring. This is on the minds of a lot of folks. They know that we're out there throughout the summertime trying to attempt to capture wolves. Wolves are very smart and elusive, and so from time to time it feels like progress is slow, but we've actually done, I think, a good job this last year, and I'll give you a quick update on that. To date, since we've been capturing wolves in the state in the last several years, we've handled 36 wolves to date. This last year, we attempted for the first time using a helicopter to help capture wolves in the snow. That's a common practice in the Rocky Mountain states. What you're seeing here is actually a contracted helicopter trying to put a net over a wolf. And you can kind of see the wolf right there using a net gun. We tried that a few times, and we did catch one. And with a net gun, we actually had wolves sliding out underneath the net. So we came back later that month with a darting activity. You know, we do the similar sort of operations with elk and deer and other species. And just an image here of the helicopter working an area, a thicket of trees where the wolves were. This is in the diamond pack. And of course, eventually you get those animals out in the open and it becomes much easier. A helicopter works in the wintertime because the deeper snow and the wolves are much slower on the go, and you're able to get over the top of them and get a dart in them. So this is an animal that was captured with darting in the diamond pack, an adult male, 27M, captured on the 27th of February. Just going to go through a couple show photos here, kind of a show and tell, the different animals we've captured and the color variations and et cetera. Here's a yearling female that was also captured darting in the smack out pack on February 28th. In the smack out pack, we are seeing the color variation, including black wolves. Most of the black wolves that we've seen in the state have originated from or are part of the smack out pack. And because I'm going to be rattling off different pack names here, sorry, Director Anderson, but right over your shoulder is I put up a poster of the different packs so that as during the presentation, if you want to glance where that is in the state, you can. We don't carry wolves this way. I want to start off first with this sort of saying that. But it is an internet legend. We've all seen those photographs of wolves on the internet that look 200 or 300 pounds. And it's really how you picking them up this way kind of makes them look like that. This is an adult male in the smack out pack that we captured with a helicopter, M28. This is a 100-pound animal. And so you can see, and that's that gentleman there, Scott Becker, our wolf bio, is about 6'3". And you can see actually how big a 100-pound animal looks, but it is a 100-pound animal. And this is about a 4 or 5 year old animal. You can actually see the gray around the muzzle, it aging a little bit. This is the animal that's currently collared in the smack out pack that's still wearing a functioning GPS collar. I'll talk more about that in a moment. This is one of our early captures using trapping on the ground, of course, a yearling female that was captured in the Tianwei on May 9th, F-31. I'll talk a little bit more later on about mortalities that we've had this year. This was actually an animal that, if you recall back in May, where a few days after the capture, this animal we found dead, and after investigation by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, it was discovered that it was attacked by a cougar and bit on the top of the head and killed. This is our most recent capture in the Ruby area, and I'll talk again in a moment about why I'm not calling that Ruby Pack and calling it the Ruby area. It's a yearling female, F-36, that was caught on July 15th. I'll also talk in a moment about this is likely at one time a member of the Smackout Pack, and we believe the Smackout Pack now is starting to break apart a little bit, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But again, knowing that we tend to see that those black wolves descending from the Smackout Pack. So this is just, if you look on that map, this is just immediately south of the Smackout territory. Here's a case where we caught the smaller pup here. We caught a pup in 2010 in the Tianwei Pack. Put an ear, too small to put a radio collar on, put ear tags in it, and lo and behold, this last spring it showed up in the Entiat. We were able to actually get the number off those ear tags. And this is a disperser then from the Tianwei. A great photograph in the Entiat. Not sure where this animal is at this point. Later on, we did have sightings of wolves in the Wenatchee area. We actually have several photos of two animals roaming together, and we announced the Wenatchee Pack. Neither of these animals are wearing a collar. We did attempt to trap that area, and were unsuccessful. Some of you have seen this before, also red ear tags here. There's some speculation that may be that Entiat female, but at this point we can't confirm that. But the color-wise and the ear tags seem to match up, but we just simply can't confirm that without handling the animal. So this was in March 2013, when the animals were a little down lower based on snow and where the ungulates were, the deer and elk populations were. Since then, we haven't had any documentation of these two animals. And then some encouraging news, some good news in terms of the pathway to recovery. This is the alpha female from the Lookout Pack, May 15th. You can tell just by looking at her that she's produced pups this last year. We have got video of at least two pups from the Lookout Pack. As I said, that's in terms of the pathway to recovery, that's good news. Reproduction again in the Lookout Pack, where it's been absent for the past few years. And we spent a tremendous amount of time this year trying to put a collar on one of the members of the Lookout Pack. We believe at this point it's the alpha male and alpha female and a couple pups. They're very, very smart. We got outsmarted a couple times with having traps dug up, and we'll try it again this winter or next spring.
Was that a trap there?
No, that wasn't. That was likely there was a little bit of lure on the ground. So a trail camera set up and then purposely a little lure in front of it so that you can get that kind of action. So summarizing all that, I've just shown you some of the highlights and the animals that we've captured. This is the pack map that's above Director Anderson there. The red squares indicate all the areas that we've trapped, either with trapping on the ground or using a helicopter. So I'll walk through these here real quick. Of course, we use the helicopter in Diamond Pack and put collars out and smack out. And then we captured an animal in Ruby. We've been trapping south of Ruby, which I'll talk about here in a moment, where we believe there are some animals. The Spokane Reservation trapped Huckleberry and put two collars out. The helicopter was in Strawberry with the Colville tribe and put a single collar out. Then they trapped both of these areas. We spent some time, tremendous amount of time this summer, trying to capture animals in the Lookout Pack. And then, of course, we captured some animals in Tianwei, that female I showed you, and a few others this year. And then we attempted to trap animals in the Wenatchee Pack when we were unsuccessful. So pretty good coverage. The ones that we did not trap, the Salmo Pack, that's an area that already has a collar. It's been functioning well. It wasn't the highest priority to go back up there and put more collars out. And then Boulder Creek, that's an area that we've been ongoing monitoring with cameras and with public sightings, and really haven't seen the kind of activity that warrants going up there and putting traps out. So summarizing all that.
Before you move on, I think you mentioned to me that you're intending to look in the South Cascades and do some trapping, or what's the plan there?
You bet. I'll get to that here in just another slide
okay.
or two. So summarizing that, we've had 12 captures this year. That includes the Spokane tribe and the Colville tribe, and we've put 14 callers out this year. Or there are 14 callers out this year. Sorry, 12 animals captured, two of those were already existing. There are 14 callers. The other thing I wanted to point out, so this is that same information, the Boulder Creek that I just highlighted, that's an area that we've had as a suspected pack for a couple years. And as we move forward in wolf recovery, you'll see that there are packs on the map, and then they are off the map because the pack disintegrated or dispersed, or that an area like this where we think there's pack activity, and after a few years of not seeing anything or capturing anything, that's off the map. Packs change position and get new names, and so it's going to be a very dynamic thing. In this case, the Boulder Creek area was an area that we thought we had pack level activity. We've been up there for a couple summers now and have not been able to confirm that, and that will be likely one that you'll see coming off the map this coming December. The other thing I wanted to discuss here today was the mortalities. I already mentioned the mortality in the Tianwe pack, the animal just after being collared that was killed by a cougar. We did have on the Spokane Reservation, a part of the Huckleberry pack, an animal that was shot and killed on the Spokane Indian Reservation. And then you notice the total down here is 3. Right now there's an ongoing investigation of a mortality in the Pasayton Wilderness Area in northern Okanagan County. So this is an image of all of the collar data that we've had since the first collar that we've put out. So this is not active collars that are current today. This is, and the point of showing this slide is to give you an idea about the course of the dispersal distance that we're seeing. You can see a couple animals here that have tremendous dispersal distance, but also where Wolf Central is right now in Washington and the range of those animals. This is also the some of the data that we're sharing with our co-managers, with the tribes, and then I'll show an image here that our data sharing program with livestock producers. So one of the things I wanted to stress today was, of course, we capture animals and put radio collars on. That's how we can, helps us measure our progression and successful breeding pairs towards recovery objectives. But the other thing along with that is also just constant monitoring. And we're learning already the need for just throughout the year monitoring pack presence, pack structure, pups on the ground, and how that helps us both capture or recognize successful breeding pair, helps us with livestock producers and minimize conflict, but also understand the dynamics of the pack. And so the example here is the Smackout pack was a strong pack, probably 8 or more animals here this last count in December. We have active collars in the Smackout pack. This is that large adult male that Scott Becker was holding up. Here in July, we went back into that area to maybe start some more captures, put more collars out, and found that the pack had disbanded. And again, a very dynamic thing, a natural thing. It happens from time to time for natural reasons. Don't know why that happened, but it has. We do believe that it has happened. We're constantly monitoring that area. At this point in time, we have evidence that, the collared animal, the male, is still there, and another animal of unknown sex traveling with it. So it still meets the definition of a pack. But it's that need for that ongoing monitoring to understand what's out there. And, of course, this has implications then to how many wolves are in the landscape and livestock conflict, etc. So that being said, what we believe has happened is those animals have just naturally dispersed or out and around the Smackout pack. And what you're seeing here is a little difficult to see, but this is the collared male, the larger black male in the Smackout territory. This is that smaller female in the Ruby area. And we can tell from the telemetry data that they're overlapping a little bit. We suspect, again, we don't have any confirmation at this point, we suspect that the Ruby female was a part of the Smackout pack. And what we may see now is the beginning establishment of two packs adjacent to one another. We also have photographic evidence of animals to the north and animals farther to the south. And so we just believe that the Smackout pack has just disbanded, and what was once one pack may be multiple packs here in the next few months. Also, just as a reminder, since I have it here on the screen, this is the level of data that we're sharing with the livestock producers. So, for example, the producers, some of the producers in the Smackout pack territory are getting these daily locations to help them address wolf livestock conflicts. We continue to get reports from the public. We have a variety of ways the public can reach us, 1-800 number, 911 for emergencies, online reporting, etc. We continue to put an educational piece about coyotes and wolves in the hunting pamphlet, as well as online. There was a question just a moment ago about the online data, or about maybe some of our efforts now moving down to the Mount St. Helens area and south of 90. This is an image of the, that's hard to see, apologize for that. This is an image of the reports from the public on our online tool, where the public can document that they saw or heard wolves. They can attach photos or recordings. And one of the things that we're doing right now, we've just pulled out our last trapping area in Burnt Valley, and now we're going to be heading down to south of 90 in this cluster here, and also in the Mount St. Helens area, to follow up on as many of the credible wolf sightings as we can to see if we have any documentation of wolves south of 90 or in the St. Helens area.
So I have to ask. Sightings in Seattle, in Olympia?
Capitol Hill.
Yes, just for reasons of transparency, and also so the public can see that their own reports, for that they can see that we have those, I'm showing you all the data here. Of course, there's different levels of certainty with this, and some of these obviously may be mis-ID'd, coyotes or dogs or other things. We try to follow up on as many of those as we can. And our staff are constantly looking at these and looking for those that have the most potential to be truly be wolves, and then following up on those.
Okay.
And also, just as a reminder, we've talked many times about how great a dispersers they are, and you saw that slide, and we all know OR7 from Oregon. And so I guess my comment there is never say never, that they can be bouncing around anywhere out there in Washington right now.
Okay.
And so, of course, we'll be, from now through in December, we'll be doing our end-of-the-year surveys and our final counts for a successful breeding pair, which will then go into our final report to the service, and also are adding to our progression towards recovery. And I've shown this once before, too, again as a reminder, that what you're seeing here in the green is what we have deemed a suitable wolf habitat from the wolf conservation management plan. And then I've overlaid this, the packs on those, both confirmed and suspected packs. And the point here being is that we're starting to see things pack in northeastern Washington. We are have evidence of maybe a pack forming just south of Ruby. I just mentioned that the last area that we just captured and pulled traps out was in Burnt Valley. We do have what appears to be two animals traveling together just south of the Ruby Creek area. And so between now and December, we're going to be monitoring that and making a final determination on whether those are meet the pack status definition or not. Another area that we're watching closely is just immediately east of the wedge, the wedge polygon here. We've had some pack activity there and a couple other areas. And so, again, things are starting to pack in northeastern Washington. Lots of available habitat that we'll certainly start seeing more and more packs in looking forward. So the timeline for the remainder of the year on the capture and monitoring side, continue to monitor packs, of course, investigate those areas south of 90 and the Mount St. Helens areas, conducting our winter surveys and our final counts for minimum number of wolves and successful breeding pair. We'll be coming back to you and to the public with updates on those results, and then our final report to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in March of 2014. At this point, I'll turn it over to Stephanie to continue on.
Oh, thank you, Donnie. I just need that. Madam Chair, Commissioners,
directors. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm actually pretty excited about this chance. It's my first opportunity to be in front of all of you and speak with you about the great things we've been doing in the wildlife complex section. Of course, this is only a minor part of it, but it's been quite challenging, and I have to commend Donnie. He gave me quite the introduction there. I don't know if I can quite live up to it, but we'll certainly take you down a road of the last few months of the wildlife complex section related to wolves. I know that Donnie mentioned his work, his presentation kind of started with January. We're going to start with January as well, because a lot of work went into putting things in place before the summer activities to make sure we could do our best job to be efficient and effective in the field. So with that, we reviewed our guidelines for our depredation investigations. And we actually streamlined a lot of our methodology, found some newer ways to do things and more efficient ways to do things. We redesigned our program where with every depredation investigation, we will always have two members of our team there. It'll either be a wildlife conflict specialist or biologist from our department, and more than likely also a law enforcement officer from our department. We certainly are encouraging the local community county officers to participate and assist us, but our team always consists of at least two members from the agency. Just to bring you up to date, over the summer, or well, since January actually, we've had 15 depredation investigations. And when I say depredation investigations, I mean specifically those that were called into the agency as probable wolf. We certainly have other depredation investigations that go on, but are usually called in as bear or cougar, and those are not part of this analysis here. Of those 15, only two were confirmed wolf. Two were an unknown cause, but there were no signs of a predator involved in those other two. And then of the 11 remaining, actually six of them were predators, but they weren't wolves. They were coyotes mostly and cougars. And then we had some other causes, and some of the more frequent causes that we see are actually injuries from barbed wire fencing and T-posts, particularly to horses. But we've had other causes that have been documented throughout the investigation periods. Let's see if we get here. Perfect. We spend most of our time not actually on the depredation investigations. We spend most of our time on the preventative actions. We want to get out in front of the potential conflict situations and try to work with livestock producers and landowners that are either in areas of known wolf occupancy or potential wolf occupancy. And with that, I've listed some of the common tools here. I'm sure most of you are probably familiar with those tools. But we don't limit ourselves just to the list there. We always are thinking about new and innovative ways to bring prevention tools to the landowner. And some of the ideas that have come up most recently, and we're kind of testing the waters with these, are things like cowbells and air horns and other techniques and tools that we can use and bring to our toolbox and hopefully address some of these concerns that the livestock producers and landowners have regarding wolves. One of our most, I guess I would say, one of the things that we put a lot of effort into are these damage prevention cooperative agreements. I'm sure most of you are aware of those, but I'll just kind of give you a quick brief on those. The idea being that we would engage in a cooperative agreement with a livestock producer or landowner to assist them with preventative measures, which may include sanitation, hazing, cost sharing of those events or those tools, and allow them the opportunity to be engaged in this activity with us and realize that they're just not out there all by themselves having to face what may be coming down the line for them as wolves recolonize. Most of our damage prevention agreements are for sanitation efforts and also range riding. Most of the producers feel that those are easy things that they can do and are very effective, actually, and we've seen that across the West where other agencies have engaged in these preventative measures. And to date, we have 29 DPCA, what we call DPCA agreements, signed. But we also recognize that not everybody wants to sign an agreement with us, and that's okay. It's not that we're going to leave them out to dry either. We definitely want to provide assistance to them as well. And so in doing so, particularly in the Northeast where we have quite a lot of packs developing, we've spent a lot of time thinking about other ways that we can assist those producers. And what we've done is we've actually contracted our own range riders that will actually ride the grazing allotments for multiple producers. And we've done that with two different individuals we have on contract currently. They've been spending an exorbitant amount of time in the field for us and doing quite a good job. And they've built really good relationships with most of the producers out there. And I swear when I say every day we hear a compliment about them, it's been an amazing process for us. It's actually been one of the more positive adventures we went out on. In addition to that, we've also brought on some individuals to do sort of an on-call basis, be on-call range riders. We have three individuals right now that are on a list, and when we have a need or we see an urgent need, like Donnie mentioned, the data sharing, we see clusters of wolves in an area, we might send our on-call range rider out there just to investigate it and work with the livestock producer. In many cases, actually, we have not just from the clusters, but just sending our on-call folks out and being present on the landscape, they've actually been able to locate injured livestock for the producer. And ultimately, we'd like to think that that helps prevent our conflict issues. Some of the other things we're getting involved in are we're working right now on a pilot sanitation project, and this is actually a partnership that we're trying to develop. Our first meeting is actually in November, but we're going to try to do a partnership with the conservation districts in Ponderay, Stevens, Ferry, and Okanagan County. And then also in partnership, we're working with the Washington Department of Transportation. And the idea being that all of us can bring something to the table, either whether it be a compost facility that we can bring carcasses, or whether it be that connection with the ag producers and the livestock producers directly in the community. So we're going to get together in November and hopefully develop, put our brains together, put our thoughts together, and develop a creative approach to maybe developing something similar to what they did in the Blackfoot Project with a sanitation project to at least allow producers another avenue to assist them with carcass removal on their properties. And I'm sure most of you are familiar with some of the research projects we've been developing. Right now we're beginning two priority research projects. One is a wolf economy study, which is with the University of Washington. And they're basically going to work with livestock producers and talk to them about the idea of predator-friendly beef, and would that be a feasible market for them? Is that something they would want to engage in? Things like that. They're going to explore a broad range of things, but that's one of the those are one of the items that they're going to discuss with the producers. Additionally, the other research project we have going on is with Washington State University, Dr. Rob Wilgus, and he and I will be working very closely together because he's actually going to look at mitigating and minimizing wolf-livestock conflict. So we're going to try to assess what are the causes, what are the leading parameters that ultimately lead to a conflict between those two species of livestock and wolves, and hopefully we'll be able to tease something out that we'll be able to use for our management approach. So I'm looking really forward to that project. I'm excited to see where we can go with that. In addition to that, and concurrent with all of these, we're also working on a contracted outreach project, and that's with Western Wildlife Outreach. We've contracted them to help us sort of fill the gaps and bridge the gaps between residents of Washington, livestock producers, and recolonizing wolves. What does that mean on our landscape? So very exciting times for us in wildlife conflicts. I'm not going to bore you with this map, but I did want to explain to you some of the build-out that we've done in the agency. We went from basically having myself come on board in January and hiring one conflict specialist in the Northeast region to we now have nine conflict specialists across the state that are dedicated to these issues. And we're looking to actually hire one more. We have one vacancy still remaining. That's right here in the Ellensburg area. That advertisement closes on October 6th. So if anyone's interested, still got time. That closes October 6th, and we're really anxious to see who we might get there. I'll be honest with you, the candidate pool we have received from all of our advertisements has been very strong. We've actually been able to recruit high-quality candidates. I hope that each of you get a chance to meet those individuals because they're going to do a phenomenal job for us. And right now, these look like they're vacant, but we actually have just filled them. Tammy is going to start October 16th, and Bonnie will be on board November 1st. So it looks like we're heading in the right direction. The exciting thing about this is a lot of these people come with experience from other regions, and they're bringing some good ideas. We've already deployed some new ideas in the Skagit area, and I'm looking forward to what these folks will bring to this program as well. Okay, outreach. Well, we do outreach every day, every minute of the day. There isn't somebody who's looking for some information. We're always trying to fill in the gaps wherever we can. But we've been really involved with a lot of different kinds of meetings. I try to just lump them all here. We do public presentations, but primarily we've been working hard to build those relationships with entities in the regions, such as the conservation districts and the non-government interest groups that are buried within the communities, because we feel if we can build that relationship with them, they'll help us build a relationship across the state and help us minimize conflicts that may be slightly different than their next region over, so we can really address their needs by working with those individuals. We've been really involved in training, and actually I have two more training sessions coming up before December, but we're trying to engage other folks besides our own staff in like our depredation training. We invited U.S. Forest Service personnel. We invited county law enforcement to attend those trainings with us so they understand what we're doing when we go to these depredation investigations and we're looking at the evidence. What are we looking at? What are we looking for? It just gives them a better background on our process. We always use the media in every way we can to at least make people aware of what's going on, some of the current activities. More of the printed materials are how to stay safe in bear country, how to stay safe with wolves. But we're also looking at expanding this beyond just the printed materials that we usually use, but looking at creating videos and putting videos on our website that help people understand how flattery works and how it deters wolves and things like that. So again, very exciting stuff. Our online resources, I kind of bridged the gap right there, but our online resources, we've been updating them almost daily. I'm probably even behind at this point. There's probably something new that's already come across the table. But we try to keep up with that. We try to be transparent in all our activities with our weekly reports. As you know, we had the webinar with the managers from Montana and Idaho. That was really a successful event for us. We've got that online. I still continue to get emails regarding that and asking questions about that. So I know that we reached maybe some folks that we might not have before, at least through that event. And then contracted services for the outreach development. I already mentioned the project that we're working with, Western Wildlife Outreach. And what we noticed, just kind of going through what we've been doing so far in our activities, we realized we really did need to bridge that gap with residents and hunters and livestock producers. And so we're hoping through this project that we have contracted that they'll be able to help us reach all of those constituents and help us bring them together in one place and understanding the values of bringing their point of view to the table. Oops, I messed up. Sorry. I'll stick it this way. Future efforts, obviously more training and expand the cooperation that we have. One avenue that's come up more recently in the last few months is we've been noticing, particularly with the depredation investigations that we go on where we have horses that are injured and we realize it's from barbed wire or something like that, we're noticing more frequently that wildlife and wildlife injuries are not well known to veterinarians always, the standard veterinarian. So we're going to reach out to the veterinarians in these communities, and we're working with our veterinarian, Dr. Mansfield, to develop a program to train them on these are injuries known for predator injuries, and then these are what barbed wire and electrocution and things like that would typically look like. We're also going to still encourage law enforcement to participate in all of our events and hope that they can join us on our depredation investigations and our trainings. And we're working with Wildlife Services, too. They have a variety of staff that are available to assist us on these events. We're also, as I said, continuing to test new techniques, looking for new ideas. And if any of you have any ideas, please email me, because I'm always open for creative ways to address these conflicts and minimize the impact on our constituents. Of course, one of the top priorities for me is filling that last position and getting that person on board and doing their job in their region. And we're looking to improve all of our outreach materials, not just updating what we have, but creating new formats and reaching out to folks in different ways, maybe not just the standard printed material that we've always done in the past. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Donnie.
I think okay right there.
Okay.
See that later.
Got three last updates here for you, kind of switching gears from field-related activities to other components of the wolf management and conservation. One of those items, and just a reminder here, this is in your notebooks, as well as the full presentation. There's another packet of information, such as this table, and some summary information that are in your notebooks. A quick update on the draft 2013-15 biennial budget. Just wanted to bring your attention to kind of the implementation of the $10 increase in the personalized license plate and how that's aged out on the priorities. You've heard us talk about funding some, being a partner in the WSU Wolf Livestock Project. You see that there on the list, the outreach with Western Wildlife Outreach. Stephanie talked about teaming up with Wildlife Services, them taking part also in investigations of depredation, non-lethal activities, and potentially lethal activities down the road. And then a big chunk of it, the build-out that Stephanie talked about in the map that she showed with the new hires of the conflict specialists and being prepared for wolf activity on the landscape and that how important that rollout is. And then, of course, finally, some of the goods and services associated with radio collars and flights and all those kinds of things. And then another funding source there that you see on the far right-hand side, the tester funds. This is a federal contract that is earmarked specifically for compensation and for non-lethal approaches to minimizing conflict. Next one was the formation of our Wolf Advisory Group. We've now had, I think, four or five or so meetings with the Wolf Advisory Group. The mission of the group is to allow a diverse group of stakeholders to advise the department implementing the plan. You can see the representation, the nine members of that group, a very balanced group with that are currently drafting bylaws and those sorts of things. They are appointed by the director, and really their directive is they're an advisory group to give us advice on implementing the different policy pieces of the plan, and then potentially being a review board for compensation appeals, those types of things. Just wanted you to be aware of that. And then the last item I have that, of course, is, I think, on everybody's mind right now is the federal delisting proposal by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I wanted to quickly go over this. What really it seeks to do is remove ESA or delist this at a species level, not a subspecies level, but at a species level, gray wolves from the Endangered Species Act. It does a few other things. It extends some protection for the Mexican wolf, and then for the wolf that's over in the Great Lakes area, it reclassifies that from one species to another at a species level. But really for us, the one that touches Washington is number one there, and that's the delisting at a species level, gray wolves. So what that looks like on a map here real quick is this is the Rocky Mountain DPS, distinct population segment, that is federally delisted right now. This is the Western Great Lakes DPS, which is delisted, and this is the listed entity of the Mexican wolf. So the one that we're talking about is this area up here that touches us, and delisting, of course, all of Washington and the remaining part of the lower 48 at a species level. And, of course, you know the situation in Washington and Oregon. It's particularly important for us because a third of the state is already federally delisted and the western two-thirds of the state are federally listed. And so we're looking for that consistency in management and be able to carry out our wolf conservation management plan over the entire portion of the state. So our assistant director just got back from Washington, D.C., where they have a public testimony for the proposed rule to delist. The deadline for comments has been extended to the 28th of October, and I recently heard they've also added another opportunity for public testimony in Denver. And how that relates to our situation in Washington right now is, of course, we think that we're sitting in a good spot for federally delisting. We have a comprehensive recovery plan in place. We have the regulatory mechanisms also in place. We've already, of course, ongoing monitoring and tracking our progression, rapid progression towards recovery. We're in a great situation where we have really good connectivity and dispersal from surrounding populations. That's an important one, I think, in the eyes of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, that we have that source population of 100 breeding pair in Idaho, Montana, over 8,500 wolves in British Columbia, and of course now animals in the south in Oregon. So that's an important piece. We've documented the rapid population growth, just like the Rocky Mountain DPS. We already have packs that have the various age structures, and so we already have signs of that long-term stability of packs that have 3 and 4 age classes of animals in a pack. And as Stephanie talked about, moving forward in the outreach and education. So what the federal recovery does for us is it allows us to implement our wolf conservation management plan, allows us to take advantage of the adaptive management that's in that plan. So we think that the delisting by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife is consistent with our needs. And that's all we have. If you have any questions.
Okay. Really nice job. Welcome. You're fabulous. Enthusiasm and clarity. Very good. Any questions? Dr. Anderson?
Let's go. I don't have a question, but when you compare where we are this year in October to where we were at this time last year in October, there's truly a striking difference. Mm-hmm. And that didn't just happen by accident. That happened as a result of a lot of hard work that Stephanie and Donnie have talked about here today, not only on the part of the department, but on the part of livestock operators, and conservation groups that have contributed to looking for ways to have wolf recovery in a manner that is compatible with the other uses on the landscape. There's also a little bit of luck involved here. Good fortune that we're in really a positive place. We've had, as you know, remarkable growth in the number of wolves that we've got on the landscape. At the same time, we have this type of an outcome. I know we were, at least I can admit to, as we went through July, August, and September, almost dreading if Donnie was coming toward me, what he might have to say to me. But really great work on the part of a lot of people, and these two and the team that they've put together deserve a lot of credit. So I just wanted to acknowledge their work here with the commission.
Yeah. We knew it was going to be lots of hard work for a long period of time. The work is not going to diminish over the next several years. So, but I agree with the director. We're making tremendous progress. I think the commission had lots of concerns last year about how all this would work out. We were certainly hearing lots from the public, and we've made it through a year now without any much threat of litigation. So that in of itself is a tremendous accomplishment. Unprecedented almost. So, anyone comments or?
Oh, just one other thought. Looking back, our trip over to the Blackfoot Challenge in Montana that Commissioner Caney arranged to have us make that trip. We learned a lot on that trip, and among those was the cleanup of where you have carcasses, making sure you've got sanitary conditions, making sure that you've got a way to dispose of those animals in a manner that doesn't have them be a food source for wolves. And this partnership that they spoke to here just a little bit ago, working with a number of different entities, including DOT, to bring everybody's resources together, is one of the pieces, at least, that we learned when we were over there, and the partnership that they had with their Department of Transportation over there in Montana. So, again, some lessons learned from others, and we're learning as we go, to be sure. But we've also benefited by having some good relationships and working with other entities that have been looking for ways in which wolves can live in a manner that's consistent with the other values that we have.
And I guess I would want to add, too, that I attended the Wolf Advisory Group meeting three weeks ago, and the general feeling that I got was that all of this effort that we're putting into outreach and bringing all the major interested groups together, bringing the public lots of information, that's all bearing fruit in that the conversations are very calm and rational, and people are open to the views and perspectives of others. So it's really been a learning experience for everyone. I think there was a lot of nervousness as we went into the first phases of wolf recovery. We may be, I've thought of a lot of these sessions as therapy sessions for all of us, because wolves are doing quite nicely in the state. The trend data is very encouraging about wolves recovering nicely. So if we can all just stay calm and continue the hard work and the support for you all, I think we'll make it through. All right. No other questions, comments? Great. Thanks and welcome. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.